We are now after 6th Saturday class. We are sorry for the delay in today's class. This 6th chapter is titled Dhyana Yoga. The previous chapter was titled Karma Sannyasa Yoga. In the first five chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about Buddhi Yoga. Especially in the second chapter, he has mentioned this verse. Buddhi Yoga is nothing but work which is done focusing on Krishna and which is performed without any fruitive desires. Lord Krishna has also explained in the previous five chapters Sankhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and in the previous chapter, that is chapter 5, he explained how liberation could be achieved by the process of Nishkama Karma Yoga, where one performs activities without attachment to the fruits of one's actions. That is, one performs Nishkama Karma. As opposed to this, there is Sakama Karma, where one performs actions for enjoying the fruits of one's actions. All these different methods of yoga ultimately are meant to reach to the point of liberation. One may achieve liberation through Sankhya Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. And Krishna has been describing these different processes in the first five chapters. In the end of the previous chapter, in two or three verses, Krishna, in very condensed form, sutra form, mentioned how that same liberation can also be achieved by the process called Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta means eight, Anga means limb. So the eightfold process of yoga, also popularly called Dhyana Yoga, which is the title of this chapter. And he will expand on those three sutra verses of the previous chapter. He will expand upon it here in the 6th chapter. So the 6th chapter is especially devoted to the process of Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. And Lord Krishna will also give special emphasis to the question of controlling the mind. And he will also talk about the various destinations that a person achieves after death when he has not achieved perfection in yoga. He has not reached the 100% level. Then what happens? That will also be discussed in this chapter. In the first four verses of this chapter, Lord Krishna will be basically talking about the meaning of true renunciation and how actually it is yoga. The Ashtanga Yogi and the Nishkama Karma Yogi both have to work in a detached spirit to advance. So although Ashtanga Yoga is recommended in this chapter, and Krishna begins with that, still it is mentioned, especially in the first verse, that the process of Karma Yoga is especially better because one works for the pleasure of Krishna. And therefore, it is mentioned that an Ashtanga Yogi should not give up Nishkama Karma or selfless actions. Generally, people are accustomed to selfish actions. That is called Sakama Karma. So a Nishkama Karma should not be given up, even when one takes up processes like Ashtanga Yoga. And therefore, Krishna speaks the first verse. That was, I believe, discussed last time. This is a well-known verse, but we will just repeat it very briefly because we will continue from this point on. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Anashritah Karma Phalam
कार्यं कर्म करोति यः स संन्यासी च योगी च न निरग्नि न चाक्रियः.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. For the third time in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is emphasizing that one should not give up work. And time and time again, Krishna is mentioning the importance of performing work. And it is because of this that people have the misunderstanding that Bhagavad Gita means just simply work. No. Work is mentioned. Work cannot be given up. But work in what consciousness? Work for what purpose? Work for whom? This is the important question that is given in, that is answered in Bhagavad Gita. The common impression that people have is that Bhagavad Gita talks of Karma Yoga, that is the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and the essence of Karma Yoga is one has to simply work. So day and night everybody works hard and says that I am a karma yogi. But that is sakama karma, because a person who is attached to the fruits of his action cannot be called a yogi. It is sakama karma. Till one performs nishkama karma, one cannot be called a yogi. Nishkama karma yoga means to work in a spirit of detachment from the fruits of one's actions. So Krishna is mentioning here that one should not think that now I have attained spiritual knowledge and now I don't need to perform any duties, I don't need to do any work. So he says no. Even if one is a sannyasi, even if one is a yogi, one must continue to work. But one must work without detachment, with detachment, without attachment to the fruits of one's actions. So in any case, work must not be given up. Anashritaha karma phalam. One should not take shelter of the fruits of one's actions. One should not be attached. Karyam karma karotiya. One must go on performing one's karma in a spirit of detachment. Sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. Such a person is a real sannyasi or a real yogi. Na niragnir na cha akriyaha. The two words are mentioned here, Niragni and Akriyaha. Niragni means not to light the sacred fire, the Agnihotra. So this means that a person does not become a sannyasi simply because he has stopped performing prescribed duties. He has renounced. He says, I have renounced now, no more I need to perform prescribed duties, therefore I am a sannyasi. For a Brahmana in particular, one of the prescribed duties is to perform Agnihotras every day. That used to be the case. Fire sacrifices, homas. So a sannyasi, one does not become a sannyasi simply by giving up such prescribed duties. That is not what a sannyasi is. So therefore the word niragnir implies that do not think of artificial renunciation. Do not think that simply by giving up prescribed duties, one becomes a sannyasi. No. Similarly, akriyaha. Do not think that simply by giving up prescribed duties and sitting motionless with half-closed eyes, one becomes a yogi. No. Whether one is a sannyasi or a yogi, karyam karma karotiyaha. One must perform duties. Anashrita karma phalam, without attachment to the fruits. So this is the meaning of a real sannyasi, a real yogi. And in the next verse, verse 2, Krishna will be explaining the relationship now between sannyas and yoga. So let us all chant. the second verse together.
Yam sannyasam iti prahu yogam tam viddhi pandava nahya sanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kaschana.
What is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. Kindly repeat. What is called, there are many formulae given in the Bhagavad Gita. In school we have all studied arithmetic. In science, in commerce, so many formulae we have studied. In the fifth chapter we studied one formula. Does anyone remember? What is that formula? End of the fifth. So many formulas we studied. One formula that we studied was sense gratification equals misery. Greatest sense enjoyment equals greatest misery. Right? Also at the end of the fifth chapter, Krishna talked about the peace formula. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantim richati. The formula to attain peace is to understand that Krishna is the only enjoyer, he is the supreme proprietor, and he is the only well-wishing friend of everyone. Similarly, earlier on in Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has given one more formula, that Sankhya Yoga equals Karma Yoga. Now he gives another formula in the second verse of this chapter. What is this formula? Sannyas equals yoga. That is the next formula. Sannyas means renunciation of activities, so karma sannyas. And yoga here refers to nishkama karma yoga. So karma yoga, which is performed where actions, you perform actions without attachment to the fruits. So the formula given here is sannyas equals yoga. How so? Because sannyas means giving up the fruits of your action. And what does yoga mean? Yoga means to stabilize your mind by various procedures so that your mind will not be disturbed by various sense objects, which is the same thing. Therefore, sannyas equals yoga. Therefore, the qualification for a yogi is that he should be free from activities of sense gratification. Not only activities, it is interesting that in this verse, it is mentioned . So what is yoga? Many times you have heard and you have read also. Yoga comes from the Sanskrit word, which one? Yuj. Yuj means to link. To link with whom or what? To link with the Supreme, to link with God. So yoga is nothing but the linking process. When you travel by train, you may have seen how the engine is linked to the rest of the bogies, the trains. It comes and links and then it pulls. So the process of linking with the engine of Lord Krishna, who is the prime mover, is yoga. So in order to link with Krishna, you have to give up other links. You cannot hold on to everything at the same time. You have to hold on to Krishna, which means you have to stop holding on to this world. You cannot hold on to everything at the same time. It is not possible. So the process of linking with God is yoga. The process of giving up other links of this world is renunciation. Isn't it? Very simple. You can't do one without the other. Can you lift one foot when the other foot is not on the ground? How do you walk? Place one foot down, raise the other foot. Place that foot down, raise the other foot. Can you walk with both feet in the air? Can you walk with both feet on the ground? No. So one accompanies the other. One means the other. In order to link with Krishna, which is yoga, you have to give up links with this world. One is called yoga, the other is renunciation. So therefore, yoga equals renunciation. Is it very simple? So the formula of yoga equals sannyas is established here very, very clearly. In the conditioned state of the living entity here in this world, the living entity has become attached to enjoying this material world, to enjoying this prakriti. The living entity is absorbed in thoughts of sense gratification, wants to constantly enjoy. And therefore, this desire to enjoy this world becomes a source of his bondage. It yokes him, it binds him. You see that a bullock cart, you have seen how the bullock is yoked to the cart, correct? The bullock cannot move free from the cart because he is yoked. The farmer links up the bullock with the cart. Now the bullock is not free till the farmer sets him free. So yoking. So because of the desire for sense gratification, the desire is the yoke, is the cause that binds the living entity to this world and keeps him there. So one end there is a link. But now this link has to be established with Krishna. So what is to be done? That link has to be removed and placed to Krishna. The living entity cannot live in a vacuum. You cannot be detached from matter and not be attached to anything. You have to be attached to something. If you are not attached to matter, you must be attached to spirit. And if you are not attached to spirit, you must be attached to matter. But you cannot be attached to both matter and spirit. You cannot stand with one foot on one boat, the other foot on the other boat, when both boats are moving in the opposite direction. Is that possible? Not possible. Very momentarily you may do so, but very soon you will fall in the water. So therefore, this desire for sense gratification is what is yoking all of us to this world, just like beasts are bound by a burden or they are bound to a cart. So the process of yoga actually helps us to relieve ourselves. This material burden must be given up. But due to ignorance, people think these burdens to be symbols of progress. Have you thought about this? What the Shastra or spiritual knowledge considers as a burden, we consider as symptoms of our success. I have this much, I have this, and I have this, I have this, I have this. One more yoke, one more bondage, one more rope to tie us to this world. So we think, see how successful I am. Just imagine that there is a prisoner in the jail. And the warden comes, he ties him and keeps him with one hand tied to the bars of the jail. And then the warden comes and this time he ties him with a chain of pure gold. He ties his other hand. And he comes again, ties him his leg with a long chain of pure silver. And he comes and ties him with a chain full of diamonds. What is happening actually? If the prisoner is thinking, but just see, I have gold, diamonds, silver, rubies. Well, what is happening? These precious things are nothing but sources of increased bondage. They are tying him more and more securely to the jail. But out of ignorance, he thinks, oh, just see, gold, silver, emerald. Similarly, because of ignorance and the desire for sense enjoyment, we do not see the reality for what it is. We do not understand that the things we are striving to obtain and the things we have already obtained are actually nothing but bondage. They are burdens for us. When a man is drowning, if he places a heavy, pure gold crown on his head, what is going to happen? Are you benefiting him? He will drown even faster. So what is the value of pure gold to a man who is drowning? Similarly, to a person who is bound to the cycle of birth and death, who is destined for death and rebirth, what is the value of all this gold, silver and this and so many other things? When ultimately it's just going to pull you down in the cycle of birth and death. Pull you down, again give you a new body, again burden you with so many things to tie you up, again pull you down, again rebirth, and this is going on and on and on. So now, once and for all, we have to give up this burden. Very heavy burden. Bharam udvahato vimudhan. Prahlad Maharaj says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that people are very foolishly lifting so many unnecessary burdens and calling it happiness. Maya sukhaya. Maya sukha means it is false happiness. So after having lifted all these burdens and being in so much anxiety and worries and being burdened with so many responsibilities, they still think, I am happy. This is the miracle of Maya. One of the distinguishing characteristics of the human being is that even though he is suffering, he thinks himself happy. But this is the happiness of a madman or an intoxicated man. If you see a madman lying on the road, he's smiling to himself. You ask him, are you happy? Yeah, very happy. You say, I'm very happy. But is he really happy? No. He can't be happy. He's suffering like anything. But who can understand that? A person who's not mad can understand. But the person who's mad himself, he doesn't understand his own suffering position, although he's in great pain. Similarly, we have become mad in this world. Noonam pramattah kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya apranoti na sadhumanya yatatmanoyam asan api klesha deha. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Rishabdev Maharaj says that one becomes intoxicated and mad because of sense gratification. Indriya priti, one loves one's senses. One wants to gratify the senses. The urge for gratifying the senses is so powerful, so strong, it is very difficult to give it up. Just like an intoxicated person cannot give up his urge for alcohol. Very difficult. So also we are intoxicated with a desire for sense gratification. It is a much greater addiction than alcohol. Alcohol is just one type of sense gratification. But sense gratification itself, the desire to enjoy this world, is the biggest addiction. And to get rid of this is very, very difficult. It makes one mad. It makes one act in the most foolish ways, even to his detriment. An intoxicated person or an alcoholic knows that alcohol is ruining his life. It is destroying his family, giving him so much suffering. But he is a creature of habit. He still goes and drinks, although he is getting progressively destroyed. In the same way, also we have all kinds of addicts in this world. All living entities are also addicts. The next time we look at an alcoholic, we should know that we are also much in the same position. We are also addicts of sense enjoyment. We are tied down by the ropes of desire for enjoyment in this world. And therefore one becomes highly intoxicated and even mad. An advanced state of intoxication is madness. When one is little intoxicated, he murmurs some foolish things. He blabbers here and there. But when he's really intoxicated, then he talks like a madman, isn't it? So there are three stages: mattaha, unmattaha, pramattaha. Mattaha means illusioned. Unmattaha means intoxicated. And pramattaha means mad. Increasing stages of the same thing. So when one is in illusion, for example, one goes for the alcohol. One starts taking the alcohol, one becomes intoxicated. When one takes more and more and more, one becomes practically mad. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's lying on the road. He doesn't know. Madman. So sense gratification is like that. Rishabdev Maharaj says, Nunam Pramuttaha. One becomes mad by sense gratification. Vikarma, and therefore one performs vikarma. We have seen in the earlier discussions that there are different kinds of karmas we can perform. One of them is punya, or just plain karma. The other is vikarma, or pap, sinful activity. And the third is akarma, which is spiritual activity. So Rishabdev Maharaj is saying, Nunam pramattahe kuruti vikarma indriya pritya apranoti. So because of desire for sense gratification, he performs sins, vikarma. And then as he performs more and more sins in trying to fulfill his desires, he becomes mad. Mad for sense gratification. Therefore we see that when the desire for sense enjoyment becomes very strong, one does all kinds of outrageous things. Out of a desire for enjoyment, people murder each other, even if it's close family members. They kill each other, they fight with each other, they destroy each other. These are symptoms of madness. So they are big burdens which are causing us so much pain. Therefore Rishabdev says that it doesn't befit a human being, it doesn't befit a living entity who has acquired a human body to do this kind of activity. Because this will make you mad. So this desire for sense gratification is our real enemy. And until one is able to give this up, it will bind us to this material world. It will hold us, bog us down, hold us like an anchor. You know what an anchor is? An anchor ties a boat to the bed of the river. So the boat is tied and the anchor goes into the bottom of the sand of the river bed, and the boat cannot now get loose. But when you take off the anchor, the boat is free. So now we are anchored in this material world by the desire for sense gratification. It is holding us firmly. So when we let loose, then we can become really free. Freedom. So both renunciation and yoga therefore mean the same thing. Real renunciation is not just something negative. Anasaktasya vishayan yatharam upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Rupa Goswami defines what is real renunciation. Anasaktasya vishayan. One should be detached from all objects in this world. Yatharam upayunjataha. One can still engage them. One can utilize these objects. Krishna sambandhe. One can use objects of this material world not for one's sense gratification, but for Krishna's service. Yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Then it is called yukta vairagya. Perfect renunciation. So perfect renunciation according to Rupa Goswami means that one does not say no to things that can be used in the service of Krishna. We can use computers in the service of Krishna. We can use microphones in the service of Krishna. We can use cars and aeroplanes in the service of Krishna. We can use everything of this world. But those things that cannot be used in the service of Krishna, then that we should not use. That we should not accept. Forbidden things cannot be accepted in the service of Krishna. And that is why we have the four regulative principles. No intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating. We cannot perform forbidden activities and say, I'm using it for Krishna. I'm drinking alcohol for Krishna's sake. No. I'm eating meat for Krishna's sake. No. That cannot be done. Forbidden activities are not allowed to be used in Krishna's service. But that which is not forbidden, we can utilize for Krishna's service, or we can utilize for sense gratification. If we avoid using the objects for sense gratification and instead use them only for Krishna's service, that is perfection of renunciation. You have heard this example also before, and Prabhupada used to often give this example, that sometimes when people approach certain kinds of sadhus with money, they say, no, money is maya, I will not touch money. But Prabhupada said, if somebody comes to me with money, I will gladly accept. Why? Because I will not use that money for my sense gratification, but I will use that for Krishna's service. Therefore, for me, money is not dangerous, Prabhupada said. For me, money is an energy of Krishna. It is Lakshmi, who has to be used in Narayan's service. So money is not a sin, provided it is used for Krishna's service. If it is not used for Krishna's service, it is a sin.
Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhu vastinaha mumukshubhi parityago falgu vairagya uchyate.
As opposed to yukta vairagya, there is something called falgu vairagya. You know what is the word falgu? Does anyone know? No. Falgu is a river in Bihar. And this river is very deceptive. It appears that it is only sand. But when you step in, you fall down. Because it is a river. You think it is sand, it's land. But actually it's a river. So it is deceptive, it is false. So having defined what is perfect or true renunciation or vairagya, yuktam vairagya muchyate, now Rupa Goswami describes what is false renunciation, what appears to be renunciation but is not actually renunciation. What is that? He says, for one who is keen to achieve the state of liberation, but he gives up, mumukshubhi parityago, he gives up what things? Those things that can be used in the service of Krishna. Prapanchikataya buddhya, thinking that this is just of this prapancha, that this is material. Hari sambandhi vastunaha. So those vastus are those things that can be used for Lord Hari. Parityaga, you renounce it. Why? Prapanchikataya buddhya. You think it is a material object, I will not use for Krishna's service. Such a mentality is false renunciation. If this nice microphone or this amplifier is available, I will not say this is maya. I will say, yes, let us use it for Krishna's service. Let us play some nice bhajans there. Or let us use it for some nice Krishna katha. So renouncing things which can be used in Krishna's service is falgu vairagya, false renunciation. So this is a very important concept of renunciation. Real renunciation is something positive, engaging things in Krishna's service rather than simply giving up. And that is why all the more we can understand how karma sannyas and karma yoga are the same thing. And Krishna will now develop the point further. And let us see, now Krishna talks of two kinds of yogas, two stages of yoga. So kindly open up to text 3. We will read the next verse.
Aru rukshor munir yogam karma karana muchyate yoga rurasya tasyaiva shamah karana muchyate.
Upad, for one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, work is said to be the means, and for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Krishna is speaking of two stages of yoga, Arurukshu and Arudha. Arurukshu is the very beginning stage and Arudha is the very highest stage. Aruhiya in Sanskrit means to go up. So these two stages are to be found on the path of yoga. One is a lower stage and the other is a higher stage. Yoga is compared to a ladder. For what purpose do you use a ladder? To climb. From where to where? From a lower level to a higher level, isn't it? That's what a ladder is used for. So also the ladder of yoga is used to go up from what point to what point? The lowest point is the point of the conditioned living entities in this world, where everyone is totally absorbed in sense gratification. Their consciousness is impure because of contact with this material world, with this energy, material energy. And they are caught in the cycle of birth and death. They have no understanding of any spiritual life. It's the lowest level. And gradually one comes to human form of life. In human form of life, there is hope, some scope for beginning spiritual life. So that is the bottom point of yoga. And as one makes advancement on this path, over a period of many lifetimes, one may eventually achieve the highest perfection of spiritual life. That is the goal of yoga. So the yogic ladder stretches right from the bottom part right up to the top. And according to the varieties of elevation, the yoga is called differently. Like for example, consider that there is a five-storied building. There is one staircase that goes up all the way to the five stories. The staircase is one. But when you begin the staircase, where are you? What do you call that elevation? Ground floor. Then you go up, you reach first floor. Then you reach second floor. But isn't it the same staircase? Staircase is the same. Simply depending on what your level of elevation on the staircase is, you say, I am on the ground floor, first floor, second floor, right up to the fifth floor. But the staircase is the same. Similarly, yoga is a ladder. It takes us up from the lowest level of material consciousness to the highest levels of spiritual consciousness. So it's one ladder. But depending on where you are, at what elevation you are on this ladder, you will be called differently. Therefore, this yogic ladder is divided into three stages. There is Jnana Yoga, there is Dhyana Yoga, there is Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is the highest. So sometimes people say that, oh, Bhakti Yoga means that it is only for sentimental people. For those who could not do Ashtanga Yoga, Jnana Yoga, because they don't have the intelligence or the tapasya, therefore they are doing Bhakti Yoga. But that is a wrong understanding. Bhakti Yoga is actually the highest stage of the ladder of yoga. So you may call it as Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, but it's actually all one ladder, only different portions of the ladder. So therefore commonly one can use the word yoga. And this ladder or every stage of it can be divided into two stages. The lowest one, Aruruksha, and the Arudha, the low and the high. This is what Lord Krishna is describing over here. In the lower stage, Yoga Arurukshu stage, the Ashtanga Yogi needs to perform Nishkama Karma because his heart is not totally purified yet. He cannot give up his duties, as Krishna mentioned in the first verse of this chapter. But as he becomes more advanced and reaches the Yoga Arudha stage, the highest stage, then now he can give up performance of prescribed duties because he is already fixed and established in meditation. This is for an Ashtanga Yogi, that is, Krishna is speaking. Now generally this Ashtanga Yoga, as the very term indicates, has eight stages. There is Yam, Niyam. Yam, Niyam are the do's and don'ts, basic codes of conduct. What one must not speak true, one must not speak lies, one must follow certain discipline in life, be clean, and so on and so forth. There are many. When one has followed a moral code of conduct, then one comes to the third stage, which is called asana. One practices various kinds of positions by sitting in which one is able to control the life airs within, which disciplines the body and the mind. When one is perfecting the asanas, then one starts doing pranayama, which is the fourth stage. Pranayama means to control the breathing process. There are various forms of breathing, kumbhaka, rechaka, purak, bhastrika. So many, those of you who are doing some yogic exercises, some of these terms may be familiar. So that he has achieved the stage of pranayam.
Then slowly the mind is now beginning to focus, but still it is getting troubled by material desires. So he must push out these thoughts of sense gratification. So that is called pratyahar, fifth stage. And then now he is trying to focus his mind. That is called dharana. And now his mind has become really focused and he is in meditation. That is the seventh stage called dhyana. And when the dhyana becomes very intense and lasts for a long period of time, it is called samadhi. Samadhi means total absorption. So these are the eight stages: yam, niyam, asan, pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyana and samadhi. So according to the kind of yogi one is, samadhi can be different. Different kinds of samadhis are there for the different yogis. For those who are following jnana yoga, their samadhi is that their consciousness is absorbed in the nirakar, in the impersonal Brahman. For those who are following the path of ashtanga yoga, their consciousness focuses on the Paramatma in the heart. Dhyana vastata tad gatena manasa pashyantiyam yoginah. So the yogi concentrates his consciousness on Lord Vishnu sitting within the heart. So that is the samadhi of the ashtanga yogi. And the bhakta, his meditation is on Lord Krishna. The person Lord Krishna. So these three different kinds of samadhis exist. But ultimately, we can understand that the devotee's samadhi is the highest because his conception of the absolute truth is perfect. It is most complete. The devotee should be considered automatically to be a karmi, to be a yogi and to be a sannyasi. Because he is always meditating on Krishna, he is always thinking of Krishna, and because he is always engaged in serving Krishna, therefore there is no material activities for him. So we understand that the devotee is automatically situated on the high stages of yoga. But that doesn't mean that we should be lax and casual about our practices, because at any time if we are not careful, we may slip down the ladder. All those who are climbing mountains, they know rock climbing, many people indulge in this sport, and if you are a little bit careless, you may slip and fall down. So also the path of yoga, one must be very careful. One must not be negligent in one's practices, and in this way one would be able to steadily climb the ladder from the Yoga Rurukshu stage ultimately to reach the Yoga Rudra stage. And in text 4, Lord Krishna briefly describes what is this Yoga Rudra stage.
Yada hi nendriyartheshu na karmasvanu sajjate sarva sankalpa sannyasi yoga rudhasta docchate.
Translation: a person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. This is the end of the yoga rudha stage, the highest stage. So kindly repeat, best of an advanced yogi. He neither acts for gratifying his senses, nor he acts to obtain some fruit from his material endeavor. These are the symptoms by which one can understand whether one has achieved the higher platforms of yoga. So we will stop here. We have finished the first section of the sixth chapter, 1 to 4. And in the next section, text 5 to 9, Krishna is going to talk on a very important subject of how the mind can be controlled. The question of mind control, a very, very important topic. So that will be discussed next time. Thank you very much. Now we will have darshan and kirtan, and then some question answers, and after that, prasadam for everyone.
Hello.
You have to hold it like this. Like this.
Ashtanga. Would you kindly elaborate this pratyahar and dharan?
Pratyahar is a process of mental exertion to drive away all the disturbing thoughts from the mind. When one is trying to focus and meditate on God, so many thoughts come in our mind. So the process of driving these thoughts away, it requires a lot of effort, isn't it? Because the mind, as we will see, is chanchalam, restless. It is always acting in so many different ways. And when we are trying to focus the mind on God in a more deeper way, and we are somewhat successful in driving away the disturbing thoughts, we have started dharana. We are holding now. We are holding the object of our meditation. But when that meditation becomes more stable, more intense, it is called dhyana. And when that dhyana becomes more intense and it is held for a longer period of time and very long period of time, then it is called samadhi. Any other question?
Word to word meaning of yoga and yogi.
What is the meaning of the word yoga? The word yoga, yoga, comes from yuj, yuj dhatu. Every Sanskrit word comes from a certain root. Yuj, yuj means to link up. So the process of yoga, as we talked in the lecture, means to link with God. And the person who is trying to link with God in this way is called a yogi. Any other question? Krishna.
Interaction between mind and intelligence is the cause of miseries. And to drive away to fix one's mind in yoga, he concentrates on the Lord and fixes his mind on the Lord. He has to do a lot of effort for doing that. The other way of controlling the mind is to engage the mind in some other activity, the service of the Lord. That is called Bhakti Yoga. And Bhakti Yoga is much easier than this yogic process. Is that right, Prabhu?
Correct. Because Bhakti Yoga requires much less effort. Because automatically, because one is, as we concluded in the end of the lecture, because the devotee is thinking of Krishna, he is already in meditation. And because the devotee is always serving Krishna, so he has actually stopped his material activities. A yogi has to try hard to cease from all material activities. But for a devotee, because whatever he does is for Krishna, he has already stopped. So even an ordinary devotee is on a more elevated platform than a yogi. Even though to ordinary vision it may appear that this yogi has so many powers and he has some siddhis, but an ordinary bhakta is superior to him because he has achieved the highest stage of spiritual realization. Next question is, no one is working without some self-interest. In Krishna consciousness, in the neophyte condition, we also have some self-interests. What are those according to elevation in bhakti and how to mitigate them? At any particular stage of yoga, when we are on the lower stage, yoga rudukshu stage, then our yoga will not be pure. Our linking process is not pure. But as we practice the process, then we become pure. And finally, in the yoga rudha stage, we are totally pure. So at the beginning stage of bhakti yoga also, we may have many impurities, other interests. We may be working for purposes other than serving Krishna. For example, since we are doing bhakti yoga, we are coming to render devotional service or bhakti to Lord Krishna. But also in our hearts we may have some other desires along with the desire to serve Krishna. We want to serve Krishna, but we also want to serve our senses to some degree. That is because we have not yet reached the yoga rudha stage. Of course, it is not possible to completely stop gratifying the senses. That is not possible. The only way is to regulate the sense gratification, to do it in a way that is permitted by Krishna consciousness. For example, instead of stopping eating, which is not possible, you eat only Krishna Prasad. So you engage the sense, but in Krishna's service. The eye is engaged in seeing. Instead of saying that I will just stop seeing because my eyes are not seeing good things, better to see Krishna. Similarly with all the senses. We engage the senses in Krishna's service, and in this way gradually we become purified and elevated on the path of yoga. Any other questions? Does it depend upon yoga? The life of yoga itself is a culture. Anushilanam. Anushilanam means to cultivate. It is a process of culture. Agriculture is also a kind of culture, no? Agriculture. It is a process of cultivating something. So bhakti also is a kind of culture. Yoga, you are cultivating your link with God. So we want a culture of God consciousness. So if you look at culture from that point of view, yes, we want a spiritual culture in which real yoga can be practiced by everyone. But now we have a culture where everywhere there is bhog. Okay? Everywhere, even in temple, your senses are not left alone. Some all disturbing elements coming. So we want a culture which will facilitate our spiritual growth. Alright, so yes.
When a human being tries to satisfy his senses, there's some kind of acknowledgement, like enjoyment or some happiness that he derives from all that stuff. Most of the time I hear in the temple that we should always do something or always work in satisfaction for Krishna. I'm rather trying to satisfy Krishna. But when we do some activities, when we are trying to satisfy Krishna, in what ways do we get acknowledgement that Krishna is getting satisfied?
First of all, if we are acting according to Krishna's will, then we know that Krishna is satisfied. But how do you know that you are acting according to Krishna's will? In two ways. One, by doing what he directly says in the scripture. And second, by doing what his representatives, the devotees say, who are also working for Krishna. So then we are pleasing Krishna. So whether or not we get happiness in doing that work is a superficial thing. Sometimes we may get happiness, sometimes we may not get happiness. But if we are working sincerely for that cause, which is to fulfill Krishna's will, then Krishna will be happy. And we will progress in our spiritual life. So our immediate sense of pleasure is not the important point. Sometimes when I am chanting, I may get feel great happiness. And sometimes when I am chanting, I may feel very dull in my mind. So chanting is pleasing Krishna. But my activity is not pure because my mind is sleepy or my mind may be focusing on some other objects. But if I focus nicely, try to work hard to chant my the holy name better, then Krishna will be pleased. So that is how we understand whether Krishna is pleased or not. If you follow Krishna's instruction and follow the instructions of Krishna's representatives, then we know Krishna is pleased. We should not look for superficial pleasure. But at the same time, in service to Krishna, we will get pleasure. We will get happiness. You will get a higher happiness. Okay?
From action, there is always this aprarabdha, which is called unmanifested reaction, you know, on the subtle body. It goes on quoting it. When yogis perform yoga, they always concentrate on wildness. They don't think of anything. They don't think of, they concentrate on the Paramatma or the Brahma. So there is no quoting. When they get liberated, because of that wildness, they achieve the wildness. That is sahaja. Whereas a devotee is always in the association of the Lord and is always thinking of the Lord. And at the time of liberation, that is the separation of the stula sharir, from sukshma sharir, which is called death, he is having that coating of association with the Lord, because, and I think because of that he gets the samipya. It's the liberation called samipya. Is that right, Prabhuji?
At the time of liberation, even the subtle body is left behind. The soul also has its own body. And at the time of liberation, when a devotee becomes pure and he leaves his body, then he lives in his new spiritual body. He doesn't have a material body at that time. So he goes back to the spiritual world in a deathless body, Satchidananda body. That is the kind of body we want. That is the kind of next birth we want. And that will be our last birth. After that, no more births. Yes, last question.
When we are hearing these discourses on Bhagavad Gita, one thing is for sure that ideally one should be 24 hours Krishna conscious. Ideally. It means that his activity should be dedicated for Krishna totally. But although that is the purpose, what we see is everybody is not of the same caliber, and everybody is not at the same level of consciousness. Although one is ideally expected to have 24 hours of Krishna consciousness. So, in his endeavors of trying to do so, if he fails, then is he at fault?
Wait till the end of this chapter, then you will, there is a whole section devoted to just this topic. Bhrashta yogi. Yogo bhrashto bijayate. A yogi who is incomplete, who cannot complete his path to perfection, what happens to him? That is Arjuna's question. So you have asked Arjuna's question. So we will let Lord Krishna do the replying. Yes? So at the end of 6th chapter, he has given very nice, beautiful explanation of what are the two destinations that take place. When you are on the Yoga Rurukshu platform, then where do you go? When you are on the slightly higher platform, then where do you go? When you're in the Yoga Rudha platform, then where do you go? The different destinations after death are described. Alright? But whatever stage we are on, we have to simply go on practicing the principles of Bhakti Yoga. That's all. And success will come, whether today or tomorrow, this life or the next life. So thank you very much.